When food is plentiful, circadian rhythms are usually in sync with the light-dark cycle of the day. But if food is only available to animals when they are normally asleep, they will shift most of their circadian rhythms to match the times the food is available. In this week's Science, Cliff Saper and colleagues found that the circadian rhythms based on food availability override those of the light-dark cycle, suggesting a strategy for getting over jet lag or doing shift work. I spoke with Saper from his office at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, Massachusetts.
There's a series of genes that turn each other on and off with a 24-hour cycle. A genetically driven clock consists of some nerve cells in the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And these nerve cells are the master clock for the brain and continues to run even if you take the cells out individually and put them in a dish. One of these genes is something called BMAL1. And BMAL1 turns out to be absolutely critical for that clock to run. If you remove BMAL1, the animal has no clock ability at all. And it basically scatters its activity across the 24-hour period almost randomly.
Now, is this the only part of the brain that is involved in these circadian rhythms?
No, it turns out it's more like the conductor in a symphony. It's the master. It's the one that sets everybody else going. But it's not the only spot in the brain or even in the body that has clocks. In fact, many tissues in the body have clocks. On the other hand, if you remove the suprachiasmatic nucleus alone, the other clocks fall out of rhythm with each other, and animals have very little rhythm left. But surprisingly, if you then restrict their food so they can only get it during the wrong time of day, they will suddenly re-coordinate all those rhythms around the new cycle, suggesting that there's a different clock somewhere else in the brain that can take over from the suprachiasmatic nucleus when food is the key driving issue.
And that's what your team was studying.
And that's what we were studying.
So you worked with mice with the BMAL1 gene knocked out,
yes.
Established a baseline behavior.
Basically lack of pattern, yeah.
And gene expression, comparing them to controls. And then what did your team do?
And then we took the BMAL1 gene and put it into a viral vector. This is basically the shell of a virus. It doesn't have any of the normal replication genes of a virus. It's sort of like a stealth capsule that carries the genes into the brain and deposits them in nerve cells in the brain. And when we inject this viral vector that contains the BMAL1 gene into the brain, only those cells that receive the viral vector now have the capability of making BMAL1.
Okay. You injected it then in different parts of the brain.
Exactly. So the first experiment was to inject it into the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And this showed that when you restore the circadian clock mechanism to just the suprachiasmatic nucleus, the animals would almost immediately begin to show circadian rhythms of wake-sleep and body temperature and locomotor activity.
Did that rescue all of their abilities, or were they still different than control mice?
The BMAL1 knockout animals actually are sad little beasts. They are small, they have arthritis, they don't live very long. They don't live as long as a normal mouse. So it does not restore all of the normal physiology to these animals. But it does restore the circadian rhythms. And when you put the BMAL1 gene just into the suprachiasmatic nucleus, the animals have precisely normal circadian clocks for their behavior. And that clock is exactly the same period as does a normal animal.
What about reintroducing the BMAL1 into the dorsal medial nucleus of the hypothalamus?
So injecting the BMAL1 gene into the dorsal medial nucleus, if you give the animals plenty of food, had no effect on their circadian rhythms. They still were completely random. However, if you then put the animals in food restriction, the animals with the clock only in the suprachiasmatic nucleus were unable to respond to the food restriction. They stayed on the 24-hour light-driven clock, and unfortunately, if you didn't wake them up, they would sleep right through dinner. They wouldn't get enough food to eat. So we had to actually wake them up after the food was presented in order for them not to starve to death. On the other hand, the animals with the injections in the dorsal medial nucleus, who had no rhythms when they had plenty of food, as soon as you put them through a starve refeed cycle so that they turned on the clock genes in the dorsal medial nucleus, would start showing rhythms of both behavior and body temperature, and they would anticipate when the food would be that they'd get up a few hours early and start looking around and get ready in case the food was there the next day. So that we restored the food entrainment of circadian rhythms with the dorsomedial nucleus injection and not with the suprachiasmatic nucleus injection.
But only when they're faced with limited food. What are the implications here?
Well, there's two implications. So what the first is the dorsomedial nucleus able to override? And the answer apparently is yes. If you take an animal that has light signals and has food restriction, the animal will always follow the food. So the dorsomedial nucleus can override the suprachiasmatic nucleus when necessary and sculpt the rhythms of behavior so that they match the food availability. So it can override. And then the second question is, what use is that? And so fortunately, humans don't have this problem very often anymore where their main food source disappears and they have to find a different food source at a different time of day. On the other hand, we have a different problem, which is that we've produced a society where people sometimes have to work at the wrong time of day. So, for example, we have shift workers who suddenly, when Monday comes around, have to shift their circadian rhythms by 8 or even 16 hours to catch up with a shift that they have to do the next day. Or you'll have people who take an airplane from the United States to Japan who are suddenly faced with a 13-hour time difference, and they need suddenly to adapt to a time zone that's almost 180 degrees out of phase with their normal activity.
So the suggestion then would be to sort of starve yourself for a little while.
Exactly. And this is actually something that really needs to be tried, but the prediction would be in humans that if you fasted on your way to a meeting in Japan or on the day before you started your shift work and you then woke up at the proper time of day for where you're going to be and started eating on their time schedule, that you should be able to shift your circadian rhythms almost immediately to the new schedule.
And that's because the mouse is serving essentially as a model and we have these same genes in us?
Exactly. So these clock genes are known to be in all mammals, including humans, and the dorsomedial nucleus, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, are in exactly the same location. No one's ever tested in humans their ability to adapt to food schedules. It's all been done so far in small animals. But the light scheduling and the role of the suprachiasmatic nucleus has been tested very carefully in humans, and that's virtually identical to every other mammal. So the implication of this work is that this should produce a new way to go about trying to shape our circadian rhythms when it's necessary for our work patterns.
Cliff Saper, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Cliff Saper is senior author of a paper on light and food entrainable circadian rhythms. Read the paper in this week's Science.